The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to a special live free agency edition of A Good Football Show. I am Patrick Daugherty, joined by my dudes, Kenny Carter, Patrick Crane, and Kyle Dvorchik. We will be breaking down all of this week's crazy free agent news, including the latest Deshaun Watson rumors, J.D. McKissick's stunning betrayal of the Buffalo Bills, tight ends filming videos in barbershops, apparently hinting at where they may or may not be signing in the year 2022, but today was kind of today being Wednesday, was a lower wattage news day. Maybe we were hoping, but not a whole lot to talk about that. That's not true. Not less new to talk about than we were hoping on Tuesday. But right before the show began, there was a stunning, stunning, stunning development. And that was the Washington Commanders displaying a total ignorance of American history and sending out a QB1 tweet for new quarterback Carson Wentz. You know, in the grand lineage of the Nathan Peterman Bills QB1 tweet, of the Washington Commanders Dwayne Haskins QB1 tweet, of the Chicago Bears Andy Dalton QB1 tweet. And I just thought maybe I wonder which of your guys is, what was your favorite QB1 tweet, most infamous QB1 tweet you would say in this group? And will the Carson Wentz QB1 tweet join that grand lineage, Denny?
It's Peterman, by the way. Peterman has to be the best of all time because not a single person in the known world thought that Peterman was the actual QB1.
This was when Josh Allen was on the roster, by the way, his rookie year in 2018.
Including him. He was probably like, wait, what? You know, is it serious? You know, he probably called the coaches and said, I just saw him, I'm QB1. Does that mean I'm starting? No, that's the worst of all time. The Carson Wentz, you know, comparatively to Peterman, the Carson Wentz QB1 tweet is great. It's fantastic. It makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah. I mean, first, a few thoughts on the Peterman QB1 tweet. Like, props to the Bills for leaving that up. Like, that's an understanding, you know, of, like, humanity, America, we're always moving forward. That's an understanding of we have to pay tribute to what has come before us. And the Bills just leaving up the Nathan Peterman QB1 tweet, like, they're doing right by the world. Just like the Chargers leaving up the P.F. Chang's tweet. I don't know if the audience is quite familiar with that one.
Oh, yeah. But, a classic.
One of the greatest tweets in the history of the app.
If you're chronically online, you know what we're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. Check out, just Google Chargers P.F. Chang's. Crane, Kyle, do either of you have a secondary, a contrarian answer? Or do we just acknowledge that the greatest QB1 tweet of all time is Nathan Peterman?
I mean, obviously, I'm not going to go against the Twitter historian here, Denny Carter, but I will say there's probably a fun little narrative around the Dalton one, which is that, Matt Nagy probably sent that himself.
That's why the Bears were the only team that allowed their head coach to have the Twitter password. And so I don't remember. The Bears sent out 489 Andy Dalton tweets in one 13-day span last spring, and people were just begging them to log off, and they finally did. But the Bills, by the way, the Peterman one is just put over the top too by like this like very like abrasive like thundering EDM soundtrack. Like it was like so of the moment. It was like when EDM was like in its mainstream death rattle. And the Bills just used it to soundtrack their Nathan Peterman QB1. Again, while Josh Allen was on the roster after they traded up for him twice in that draft.
We can't emphasize that enough.
No, I don't think.
No, that Josh Allen, currently the best quarterback in the NFL, was on the roster.
I'm looking for a Christian Hackenberg QB1 tweet, but I'm not coming up with anything. So I think it's Peterman. There's
maybe
really no
Penn
contest.
State 2013, they might have had one for the Christian Hackenberg.
He was AAF, or it was AF because I know it was an XFL. I think he was an AF quarterback. They have to have Memphis Express, apparently. He was a Memphis Express quarterback. They have to have given him a QB1 tweet, and even they probably were wrong.
It's funny that you mentioned Hackenberg because I'm working on a QB model right now and I keep having to like adjust the scale because Hackenberg keeps going into the negatives.
Yeah. Oh boy, he shone brightly. He just shone so brightly as an NFL quarterback. But I think maybe there was recently a CFL QB1 tweet about Paxton Lynch. But then he got kicked off the team or something because he wasn't vaccinated.
Oh, I know he got cut. He's on Michigan Panthers. Is that right?
Is he on the Fighting Fishers? I don't know. There's a lot of things people need to Google. They need to Google the Michigan Portlanders or something, whatever they're called. They need to Google.
All right, well, they're the Panthers. All right. Let's not be that disrespectful. We can disrespect the quarterbacks, but the great franchise that is the Michigan Panthers, I won't stand for it.
I do follow the Michigan Panthers on Twitter. I will say they're, I think maybe I already had to mute them. They tweet a lot.
One thing that you can say about Christian Hackenberg was that he was tall.
Was he even that tall? I mean, I think he was like 6'2", which is tall for an average human. And like,
he's only 6'2". You know, I'd kill for 6'2".
Paxton Lynch was tall.
Yeah, I mean, Paxton Lynch was like 6'11", 7'1", 7'2", I think.
Excuse me, Christian Hackenberg was 6'4".
Okay, all right. He's tall. Just want to put that out. He's really tall. Even for
center yet?
The most important part of being a quarterback is being tall. Obviously.
All that matters.
Six. I mean, there's something to that.
Shoot, there is, isn't there? Crap.
Well, we all just got exposed. But but just Google, a lot of good stuff to Google there. We were hoping by the time we aired the show that Deshaun Watson would have a new team for a variety of reasons.
We keep vamping dumb quarterback stuff till we get the Watson news. It's 3 a.m. We're really struggling.
Just vamping till Friday at 4:45 p.m. Like everyone else has long since dropped off to watch the NCAA tournament. But we're hoping he would sign by now. So we'd have a big news item to talk about on the show. And B, kind of like break loose this whole free agent market, which is kind of like log jammed right now. Is a lot of the money is like tied up waiting for, like, lots of teams have a lot riding on this decision. And it's crazy. I mean, as of Wednesday evening, so by the time you listen to this show, if you're downloading, listening to the show on Thursday, there's a good chance Deshaun Watson will actually have a new home. But like, we, after all these rumors all week, I feel like we still like don't even have a good lean on where he's going to go. We're already getting collateral damage, like whereas Baker Mayfield has announced his divorce from the Cleveland Browns. But do any of you even have a good lean on where you think he's going? Nope.
I think Cleveland is the most sensible landing spot at the moment. I don't get the appeal with the Saints. Saints are down bad. Let's just be honest about it. The Panthers have DJ Moore and Christian McCaffrey, which is nice. But the Browns have like a real team. Like 2 years ago, they were an ascendant team. Okay, and they had a down 2021. With Mayfield struggling through 3 or 4 serious injuries. For some reason, he kept playing. The team probably would have been better if they would have been able to rest him for a while last year, but either he didn't let them or they couldn't or whatever. But yeah, I think that they have a solid defense. They have pieces on the offense. You can't take that away from them. Anyway, I think Watson is, would look at Cleveland and say, you know, that team has a better chance to be successful than the other teams that are trying to recruit me.
I think that's fair. I do think that the Saints have some appeal where they seem to have made peace with Michael Thomas. You've got, you know, Deontay Harris is a deep threat. You know, I think Watson would do just fine with him. Got Child Kamara. Man. Yeah. You've got some pieces. They could be okay. You also have, let's be honest, probably the head coach coming back once Deshaun Watson lands in the Saints, right? The retirement isn't going to look quite as nice once Deshaun Watson is there. So you're going to have a Sean Payton offense probably in a year or two. I think
even if it's not a Sean Payton offense by name, it will be a Sean Payton offense because Pete Carmichael, right, their offense coordinator, has been there since like the 1700s or something. He's literally like never even been named as like a head coaching candidate. He was just perfectly fine hanging out with Sean Payton, having a good time running a fun offense. And I guess finally, you know, that's now he takes over the reins. So even if not really a Sean Payton offense, like by having Sean Payton, it's spiritually the Sean Payton offense. So I kind of agree that, and the national and local reporters tend to agree with Ukraine that like Saints do seem somewhat likely just based on all the rumors. I think Cleveland makes a little more sense because they have a better cap situation. I think they've been a little more prudent with their spending, both in draft capital, not trading up nearly as much, and obviously literal dollars. So I think I'd rather see him land in Cleveland, but the Saints seem to be the lean of sort of the reporting as it's gone.
Also, this is like total speculation. I don't know, but like, it's actually close to Houston. Like maybe Watson's like, I might not have to move, you know, like you could kind of just there, you know, those considerations, however much they matter.
Say the one team of the four. So the four that seem to be being considered are the Panthers, Saints, Falcons, and Browns. I'm sure the Falcons are a distant fourth. Oh, yeah. And like, they're the one team that shouldn't even be considering this because a team. So it sounds both the Saints and the Panthers have apparently met the threshold of offering three first round picks. And like if the Falcons did that, I mean, a team that has holes in essentially every position group on the entire roster, just it would just be like a dead situation walking for all involved, I feel like. And it would just be like totally dead on arrival, basically, Deshaun Watson in Atlanta. And there's just that's a team that's a roster that cannot afford, straight up just can't afford to trade three first round picks and more. I mean, because it sounds like it's like a minimum of three first round picks. Yeah. And you know, just no receiving talent whatsoever. It just the fit makes no sense in any way, shape, or form.
The Texans want players along with the three firsts. Like, and I honestly don't even know who that would be on the Falcons. Who would they want besides Pitts? I don't know.
Yeah, it's I mean, I guess the Jarvis Landry they could maybe sign, but
it would be like we'd need David Stern to come in and block the trade or something.
He probably, yeah. I mean, they would. Goodell would. Goodell's not above like doing that.
I mean, it would literally be the exact same thing. Watson was with the Houston Texans not last year, but the last year he played with them, where I believe he went 4-12 in his final season because he was the only good player. And they will not be able to acquire any more good players via the cost of acquiring Deshaun Watson. So it would be exactly and probably worse than his final situation with the Texans.
So we just talked a lot about Deshaun Watson. Hopefully this is some of this still makes sense by Thursday afternoon. If you're listening to this in your car on your commute home Thursday evening, but it's Wednesday evening. We got people watching with us live, and yeah, it's just a crazy situation where there's like this big of a domino to fall. And I agree. The rumors seem to be leaning towards the Saints, but it doesn't seem like any of the national reporters really have a lean on this. And this is an unprecedented situation.
I think the Panthers are probably the most desperate. Right.
They are. And I feel like they still might be the best roster.
No, Saints have a good, Saints have a legitimately good roster. They're just capped at what they're, you know, they're done spending right now. This is the end of what they do.
They have a good roster. They have a top heavy roster. Their thing where they used to have, like, for a while, they were like the deepest team in the NFL. That's not the case anymore. Michael Thomas, you know, barely played in 2 years. Alvin Kamara took so many hits last year. Looked like maybe he was in like his slowing down phase. I mean, the offensive line is question marks now. I don't know. I mean, the Panthers, I would still say the Panthers have the best weapons, even though it's actually close with the Saints if Michael Thomas is healthy.
I feel like I think Panthers is most desperate team is absolutely
they are.
With Tepper not getting success early, the very fumbled Darnold move. Plus, we know Rhule is on probably his last leg. I mean, obviously on his last legs, really desperate.
If they don't get Watson, he's got to have like a 5% chance of coaching there next year.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they have no outs to hit to success after that. So
yeah.
So we talked about Deshaun Watson creating collateral damage. Maybe the Browns and Baker Mayfield were already going to break up before this, but that seems over. Another situation that like has Deshaun Watson has to sign somewhere first before this domino can fall. But Baker Mayfield moving on from the Browns most likely. It seemed like the two most likely destinations will be the Seahawks and Colts. Do any of us like either one of those destinations, or is there just kind of nothing to like? Would there be anything to like about Baker Mayfield, say with Pete Carroll? And even if he's with like a good offensive coach and Frank Reich, is there anything salvageable with Baker Mayfield? Like, will there be any positivity at all about a Baker Mayfield move to the Seahawks or the Colts from any of you three?
For fantasy, I mean, I would prefer he go to the Colts than the Seahawks. Yeah. I just think, you know, the Seahawks would do what they've always dreamed of doing, which is never passing. If Baker Mayfield were under center, for Seattle. But you know, the Colts, I think could manage him to an extent. I talked about the injuries earlier, but you know, you can't discount that in Baker Mayfield's 2021 struggles. Like he couldn't throw the ball, like, you know, and you saw it. You know, you didn't have to be a tape grinder to realize the guy was struggling mightily to throw the ball beyond, you know, 5 or 10 yards. And if he
throw to receivers, really, which is kind of weird. I mean,
not that he was stellar in 2020, but he was way better, way more efficient, way less mistake prone. And I think if Frank Reich can coax that out of Baker Mayfield, which I think maybe he can, then the Colts can maintain, you know, some relevance, some playoff potential with, you know, because they have some good pieces there. And also they're not in a great division.
Yeah. I mean, the Colts were one like week 18 implosion away from making the playoffs. Not that they would have been a great contender, because having Carson Wentz going up against, you know, your Josh Allen's, Mahomes, Burrows, you're not going to be a great contender. You're probably not going to the Super Bowl, but they were one game away against the Jaguars of all teams they couldn't win of making the playoffs. And Carson Wentz imploded regularly and had a poor game versus the Jaguars. If Baker Mayfield, who, if I remember all of the reporting, I'm sure some of this kind of got lost in the way, was like multiple dislocations, a fracture, torn labrum, and then he was listed on the injury report with like knee, groin, and one other issue. I don't remember what it was. All of these different things. He clearly should not have been out on the football field towards the end of last year. And I don't think it's like it's giving, you know, I don't think it's being too kind to him to say that like that made him a worse quarterback by a wide margin. He was like had upside as a rookie, both coming into the league as like clearly an analytical darling prospect.
He was the one true analytics god.
And then like scouting guys actually sort of agreed, because the Browns weren't full analytics at that point. There are some quotes from the management at the time that said, you know, we're still not, you know, some disparaging quotes against nerds saying they were still trusting their eyes essentially. And so we had sort of a marriage of both sides coming together on him. And then I believe he set the touchdown record as a rookie as well. Not a ton of rookies get a ton of touchdowns. Then he kind of goes off the rails and finishes very much off the rails. But there was something to salvage in there, even if I don't like, he's probably never going to be an elite quarterback. We've sailed on that ship. But can he be better than Carson Wentz was last year to a meaningful degree? I think so. And they're set up in a very similar way. A team with a great offensive line, a great running back, or in the Browns' case, a great running back tandem to sort of hide the quarterback, and then sort of just the receivers that are necessary. Not good receivers, but not complete depth at receiver. That's exactly the setup the Browns tried to make work, and they did 2 years ago. They just couldn't make it work last year. I'm not, like, especially for fantasy, he seems like the type of quarterback that, when we're generous, we say better for real life, because he gets wins on the board at his best. And I don't know if we get his best. I think that's possible. I don't think I'm completely out on Wentz, or well, he's actually similar to Wentz. It's unreal.
They Spider-Man meme kind of with each other.
When Denny was talking, he's like, I don't see why they can't salvage this once highly respected quarterback in Indianapolis. I was like, I can't believe I'm about to go say what I'm about to say.
I'm into the Baker Mayfield to the Colts. I agree with a lot of points into made. I'm like, I think they're a playoff team. He's an upgrade over Wentz. Like, it's going to be good for Jonathan Taylor. It's going to be good for Michael Pittman if he goes there. To Denny's point about the efficiency, looking back at 2020, he was 11th in EPA per play behind Phillip Rivers, who was 8th that year. I mean, these guys got Phillip Rivers to 8th. Like, they don't need to have some superstar. You know, they can get good offensive play. Kirk Cousins was 9th. Derek Carr was 10th in 2020. So they, it's not actually that high of a bar to have Baker Mayfield get to, you know, competent quarterback play. I think they can do that. And Baker Mayfield was also 11th in CPOE that year. So, you know, it wasn't all just kind of the Browns scheme. And, you know, speaking of scheme, I think the Colts did a pretty decent job with Wentz last year. They hit him more down the stretch where they actually started going run heavy, but they were balanced for a long stretch of the season where they were passing at a decent rate on first and 10. They weren't going like kind of the full Pete Carroll method where you're truly hiding your quarterback and you're putting him in tough passing situations because you don't want to pass as much as humanly possible. So I think the Colts, if they have Mayfield, will use him. They're not going to like put it all on him, but they'll set him up in enough positive situations to where he can have success and help keep the offense going. But then they'll also be using Jonathan Taylor extensively. I think if he goes to Seattle, he's going to end up in a lot of third and eights, you know, third and sixes, and it's just going to be ugly.
The one thing I'll say about the fit with the Colts is that I just feel like we've already seen it, because as you guys laid out, it's very similar to the setup with the 2020 Browns. Really good offensive line, really good run game, like kind of questionable passing game weapons, good coaching, where I just like don't know like if the ceiling could possibly go higher for either the Colts or for Baker Mayfield and that setup. But yeah, I would like it. Both teams, at least the Seahawks or the Colts, would be run focused teams. I think we would all agree Baker Mayfield needs to go because he's not an instant offense creator. What is it, Denny? Can he beat out Drew Lock? Is that what you're going to say?
I'm guessing yes. But with Mayfield to the Colts, I'm growing on this idea as we speak. You talked about I've seen this before and I know the ceiling. Well, the Browns were like two plays, maybe one play away from reaching the AFC title game 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. After beating the Steelers in the first round, I think Jim Irsay would sell his soul to get to the second round of the playoffs.
He would sell that private jet he was standing in front of at the end of the season for a good quarterback.
I think he would be thrilled to get to the divisional round or the AFC title game. So, emphasizing Corain's point on 2020 for Baker Mayfield and his efficiency. I mean, he had the same success rate as Kirk Cousins that year. His success rate was higher than Russell Wilson and Drew Brees and Tom Brady for one. So I think that there is something to the Colts being able to manage Mayfield.
I couldn't overcome Chad Henne hero ball in that divisional round loss to the Chiefs, where Chad Henne put the team on his back. But you know, enough about quarterbacks.
Rewriting history.
Yeah, where we have nothing really even to go on with Deshaun Watson and Baker Mayfield still. We'll flip gears to Dawson Knox has emerged, you know, as a fantasy manager favorite because of his, you know, his penchant for big plays and touchdowns. But the Bills seemed adamant all along about adding a compliment, and they have done so in O.J. Howard. Although Howard's deal, it's for only 1 year and $3.5 million. Is this enough to scare us off Knox and this loaded offense, Crane? And like, or is it actually a good sign that they added like a role player in OJ Howard and maybe someone that won't actually like steal a lot of important snaps? How do you think the OJ Howard signing is going to affect Dawson Knox for 2022?
I think it's super, super bad.
Okay. Well, great.
Dawson Knox was not efficient last year. He had 1.2 yards per route run. He had 1.04 the year before, 1.1 the year before that. So like nothing really changed last year, except he just ran an enormous amount of routes. He had 573 routes last year. That was up from 341 the year before. Route rate is kind of, normally it's not the key to success at tight end, but occasionally we get these guys who are running like 85% route rates at the tight end position. It's not common. And Thomas was basically Logan Thomas from the year before, or Knox was basically Logan Thomas from 2020. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that can, if that situation changes, it's a real problem because you're not getting efficiency on those routes. You're just out there all the time as a receiver, which there are very few tight ends who have that role. So Howard has been very efficient at times. He never really got used as a receiver the way we wanted, but he has a career 1.61 yards per route run. I think he's probably a better receiver than Knox if they let him have that opportunity. They probably won't. But even if they just give him like a 30% route rate, that's really going to hurt Knox. I don't think he can get there on efficiency.
It's also just not a good sign that they were clearly so eager to add competition. Like they weren't. It wasn't somebody who were like, yeah, Dawson Knox is going to have an even bigger role this year, folks. And you know, I also feel like it's not just OJ Howard. It's also Gabriel Davis. Like how big red zone threat, a guy who you may have heard made some big plays in the playoffs. So it seems like maybe that we saw like the ceiling for Dawson Knox last year. And yeah, there's not another step to take, and there might even be big time regression coming.
Buffalo did use two tight ends way, way more frequently in the final weeks of the season and into the postseason than they did early on. That was part of how they were beating that too high safety defensive approach by all their opponents. So and they were, you know, establishing a little bit at least with that two tight end approach. So Joe Buscaglia from The Athletic, talked about two weeks ago, maybe 10 days ago, wrote a piece about how the team wants to continue in that direction. So expect them to sign some tight end. I think it could have been way worse for Dawson Knox if Tom Brady hadn't come back. The Bills might have signed Gronk, and Gronk would have been the primary pass catching tight end. That would have been a massive problem for Knox. So, yeah, it's not great for Knox, but I do think he's still going to be out there a good amount and running a good amount of routes.
Let's just go around the horn. Is Dawson Knox going to be a wide receiver one in 2022, Patrick Kerane?
No, but he also won't be a tight end one.
Oh, yeah, good. Important distinction. Denny, will he be a top 12 tight end? Will he be top 12 by average points in PPR leagues, Denny? Dawson Knox, go.
Yes, because anybody can do that.
Oh, come on.
I was going to say no when you added the caveat to this average points. If it's total points, the guy stays healthy and keeps running them routes and gets there. Average points, some guys will play like 12 games and get ahead of him because, as Denny said, not that hard to reach the 12th mark.
So it sounds like we're all shopping Dawson Knox in our dynasty leagues. This is kind of sad.
It's a real buyer's market if you want him.
He's still young. He was really good last year. I mean, he was really good in that he was like really fancy and that he made big plays.
He was really present.
Yeah, he was very present for the Buffalo Bills last year. And speaking of the Buffalo Bills, I mean, we all scoffed at this idea, but Kyle apparently wants to talk about defense, quote unquote, and talk about the Bills giving Von Miller going out as a 6-year, $120 million deal, as Kyle pointed out in our Slack chat, that's probably inflated. But Kyle, what are your thoughts on Von Miller to the Bills?
Yeah, so I've been watching Twitter because logged on, can't not log can't on, log even on the show, can't. And supposedly it's looking like realistically a 3-year north of $50 million deal. Still nuts, and he is the only defensive player to sign $200 million contracts in the lifetime of his career. Not surprising. He's still playing at a really high level. Picked up, I think, 5 sacks in 8 games with the Rams after he was traded. Then 4 sacks in 4 playoff games. I mean, the Bills had like the best defense by EPA per play, by points allowed, and it wasn't that close. They were easily the best defense in the league last year. And now they add one of the best pass rushers in the league. This is just a testament to the insane arms race the AFC specifically is going through. Seeing what the Chargers are doing, what the Broncos are doing, what now the Bills are doing is absolutely nuts. And I like, obviously, it makes sense. If you can find the financial means to bring in a Von Miller, absolutely do it. But it makes even more sense for these top teams to push all in right now because they all have like all of the best young quarterbacks are all in the AFC.
It's insane. I think it's not an original opinion. It just kind of feels like 2022 is shaping up as the year of the Bills because we all saw with our own eyes how close they were in 2021. You kind of think maybe the AFC West was cannibalized itself, or the AFC West, I think, like, as a measure of division strength, like the AFC West might have like the best first place team in the AFC, except for maybe the Bills could challenge. They'll probably have the best second place team. They'll probably have the best third place team. And then they might even have the best fourth place team.
Totally.
And just a totally insane division that they could like really, you know, the beating up on themselves principle. And it's the Bills. This might be the best overall roster, even with how loaded all those AFC West rosters are. The Bills, they're just like, they say the defense is like, they have the defensive minded head coach, which so they have like the best of both worlds, where they have like the superstar quarterback who's like his own offensive system, basically. And then they have the head coach who you generally want an offensive mastermind. But like when you have a defensive mastermind who's like really, really good, like that's as big of a weapon. I feel like they have that in Sean McDermott. And it does feel like, man, the Bills are now like a free agent destination, like wild world out here, folks.
By the way, the Bills had Pro Football Focus's 10th highest graded pass rush last year. So, you know, we could be looking at top three, you know, unit for this year.
Yeah, and they were a bit overrated by the EPA last year, I thought, because they had such an easy schedule. But, you know, this Von Miller sign is going to help them maybe even be a more legitimate defense at Denny's point. And they also play the Jets again twice this year. You know, they're going to have a much easier schedule than the AFC West counterparts for sure.
So I called Buffalo a free agent destination. That is true for everyone but one player, J.D. McKissic, who is now a legendary Buffalo turncoat, a Bills trader, will be forever cursed by Bills Mafia and forever cursed by fantasy managers because J.D. McKissic has spurned the Bills, returned to the Commanders, quote unquote, to ruin the Antonio Gibson party that was just getting started again in earnest on Tuesday. And so, Denny, we talked about this a lot on Tuesday. Is this like the sign to give up the Antonio Gibson ghost? Because like the reports were, we had a blurb on the site yesterday about the Bills have apparently been clear, or excuse me, the Commanders have apparently made it clear they want to add an early down compliment to Antonio Gibson. Understandably, it looked like he wore down really badly last year, handling so many carries. And now they've brought back the third down compliment in J.D. McKissic. Are there just too many red flags here? Or is this going to become like a value opportunity where people are scared and like looking for reasons to not draft Antonio Gibson? What is now the state of the Antonio Gibson?
Yeah, I mean, it hurts. Like we outlined on the Tuesday podcast, Antonio Gibson's
pass Antonio's route. Gibson.
Yes, that sounds like a restaurant. The his pass routes and targets spiked in the three late season games, and McKissic missed with the head injury. So we're not gonna get that. Maybe we were never gonna get that though. You know, I mean, it's March. There were still a lot of moves to be made. A lot of we have the draft. We have additions in the spring and summer. So maybe we weren't going to get that, but it's looking fairly bleak for Gibson. I will say, I mentioned a stat and not really thinking. I mentioned a stat that the Commanders last year targeted running backs at the fourth highest rate in the league. I forgot that Carson Wentz had signed with them. And I actually looked up some numbers before the podcast, like you do. So here's the thing about Carson. Yeah, I mean, you know, this is what you got to do. So Eagles fans and Colts fans told me ad nauseum on Twitter, Carson Wentz doesn't throw to running backs. And I looked it up, and I can confirm these reports. Wentz has targeted running backs on about 9% of his pass attempts over his six NFL seasons. The caveat is last year in Indianapolis, the Colts last season targeted running backs on 22.7% of their pass attempts. That's the fifth highest rate in the league. That led to 51 targets for Jonathan Taylor and 57 targets for Nyheim Hines. So, screen passes, running back dump offs. Is that his quarterback stat? Is it a team stat? Is it a system stat? Carson Wentz's history is not great with dumping the ball off. So maybe McKissic doesn't have even a little bit of luster this year back in Washington.
Yeah, I think the screens, that can definitely be a way to boost it, even if you have Wentz. But the Colts ran a lot of running back screens, so I don't know that, you're going to see more of that in Washington. I think that McKissic probably saved us from ourselves with Gibson because, this offense is not going to be one that we're going to want to be invested in. It's like one of those things where it's like week four and you're like, I just bet my whole team on the Washington Commanders, they're the second round pick. Because Antonio Gibson was going to be expensive. Gibson was going to be expensive once we got, all the projections. It's like they draft a running back in the fourth round to help spell him on early downs. There's no passing down guy. The projections were going to love him, but I don't know that it would have worked out. When I wrote up him in the free agent tracker, I was pointing out that he hasn't really been a very good receiving back. He hasn't been bad, but he's been kind of on like the Josh Jacobs, Alexander Mattison type of spectrum. He's behind Jonathan Taylor's, behind Javonte Williams. He is a former receiver in college, but not a heavily used one. And so far he hasn't flashed elite receiving ability. So I think that we were probably going to get a little overly excited about him this year as we did last year. And McKissic probably makes the whole thing a bit more realistic.
So I don't know if anyone's ever thought about this, but there are always these like Reddit conspiracy theories that the NFL is scripted. And I would say those aren't likely, right? But if they were, it would appear as though M. Night Shyamalan has taken the wheel because Newsday Sports Tom Rock has now tweeted, which was retweeted by Adam Schefter.
Hold on, he tweeted it's a joke though.
Oh, I wanted it to happen so bad.
I know. Sorry to cut you off there, but yeah, there was a tweet that J.D. McKissic had changed his mind again, maybe.
Potential.
And, And so sorry to ruin your big reveal there. Unscripted.
But I guess the NFL's real again.
It's real. Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, it's real. It's all too real, as many, many fans can attest. But so it's let's just go around the horn again. Another around the horn question. Would you use a third round pick, Patrick Crane, on Antonio Gibson? I'm going to guess the answer might start with the letter N. Okay. Denny, third round pick on Antonio Gibson.
Wait, we're all out completely on a third round pick?
I mean, are you in?
I mean, we were getting Josh Jacobs last year for like a fifth round pick.
Were we? That doesn't sound real.
Oh yeah,
that was cool. We were.
I mean, that's scripted. Yeah.
Right, scripted.
I'd be interested. You know, it's March. I don't. I'm sorry. It's hard to take. You know,
mid March. Come on, it's mid March. Is more than
you're running back. Let's go.
March is more than halfway over. Kyle, I mean, I'm assuming you'd not do it. You wouldn't use a third round pick on Antonio Gibson.
I don't think so. I think at that point, if you're taking that, like last year, if you were taking the Gibson style of back, why wouldn't you just take in DeAndre Swift, or Miles Sanders, or David Montgomery? I think we love Gibson so much because we really have this like fanciful, idealized, well, he played the wide receiver. Yeah, exactly. But like the NFL has shown us that they don't care. Like that was the thing with Josh Jacobs, right? Was that like Josh Jacobs was really, he was a committee pass catching back in college. The NFL said, we don't care. We're going to use him like a running back, a two down banger. So if the NFL is going to keep telling us that he is the two down back, I'm not going to, you know, get too excited to bet on him finally becoming the three down back. As Karain noted, on a Washington Commanders offense led by Carson Wentz that no one is excited for.
I think he's also telling us too, not that he's can't be a three down back, but he's not going to force the issue. He's like Josh Jacobs. I think he's capable if they, you know, Josh Jacobs was quite good as a receiver last year. Like you're like, why don't they do this all the time? But you know,
because they're crazy.
That's unfortunate.
Commanders, by the way, have to remake like their entire offensive line. Doesn't seem like a good situation for Antonio Gibson, our friend Carson Wentz, our dear friend. Carson Wentz, who we all, by the way, so you were mentioning Carson Wentz, Denny doesn't throw to running backs. Wasn't it also a meme that he doesn't throw to receivers? Like, who does he throw to exactly?
He only throws to tight end. I was looking at all his targets over his career, and it's like, you know, 35, 47, 52. And then you get to Dallas Goedert, it's like 175. You get to Zach Ertz, it's like 488. Like, I mean, yeah, he only throws to tight ends. So Logan Thomas isn't?
Or Travis Fulgham.
So, do you guys think this is why Jack Doyle retired?
Oh, wow. We should consider it.
We weren't ready for the big questions, Pat.
Did Mo Alie-Cox know they didn't have Carson Wentz when he re-signed? That's another big question we have to tackle.
Well, they had to pay him a lot of money to come back.
Do you guys know he used to play basketball?
Yeah, that's cool.
I didn't.
Never heard that. That's not something that comes up every time the Colts run Monday Night Football.
Where did he play basketball? I'm assuming whatever school he went to is on the first playing in the first four tonight on True TV, which is not owned by NBC. So don't watch it.
Don't watch it.
No, don't watch it. Julio Jones was cut after the Titans surrendered second. It was cut 1 year, after the Titans surrendered second and fourth round picks for his services. Now he's 33 years old. He has appeared in just 19 games over the past 2 years. Kyle, I need to throw to you, but I'm going to throw to Karain. Because he said before the show that he was not over Julio Jones as a potential wide receiver three, and he has a positive case still to make for Julio Jones. So we're excited about a potential, like, I mean, of course, it will depend on where he signs, but you still have 2022 optimism for Julio Jones, Karain, question mark?
Yeah, I still have optimism. I feel like if we would just like had our memories erased and then Julio Jones signed with the Titans today, we'd be like, gross. No, we don't like that. That's a bad fit. Guess what? He's not going to play for the Titans. He's going to play somewhere better than the Titans. Titans didn't seem to like him at all. No. And last year, 1.84 yards per out run. Not bad. That's pretty solid. And he's coming off the year before, he had 2.6 yards per out run. He was awesome in 2020, 2.44 in 2019. I mean, he struggled last year on a new team, but really can he stay healthy? If he can stay healthy, I think we're going to get, you know, pretty solid level of production out of Julio Jones and potentially in a much better situation than he was going to be in. So, like, I feel better about Julio Jones than I did, you know, a couple hours ago. And if this is going to make people, like, feel like Julio Jones is going to start for a team, like, I feel confident about that. And it's probably going to be a better situation than what he was just in. So, I view this as bullish, and I was drafting Julio Jones before this news, for, you know, just so you know where my head's at, but so I was already in, but I'm still in.
Something I've already fantasized about a few times today is Julio Jones replacing AJ Green in Arizona. Would that be enough for you, Karain?
I would love that. I mean, I think he's got way more in the tank than AJ Green does.
Yes, I agree with that. I was looking at Julio's yards per reception. Is 14 last year, which is not that far below his career rate of 15.1. And it's in line with like his 2019 numbers, where in 2019 he caught 99 balls on 157 targets. I do. Yeah. I mean, I think it's a matter of staying healthy.
You just wonder if his legs are going. He would not be the first like big receiver,
right,
whose lower half just fails him in his early 30s.
These enormous receivers just break down.
The lower half seems to go.
We saw it. We saw it to an extent with Calvin Johnson. We saw it big time with Brandon Marshall.
AJ Green. I mean, he's not as big as
Des Bryant.
AJ Green fell off the face of the planet just suddenly, you know, and it would never got back. So yeah, I do. I'm skeptical that he can play like more than a handful of games a season.
But you're still drafting him in the sixth round then, blindly, right? Yeah.
You can get him in like the 12th round. It's
I was gonna say. So what is his best ball ADP? Yeah. Is it like the 12th?
It's incredible.
Yeah. If you 11th, 12th round, something like that, I think that that's an auto click. Yeah.
Cause it is a thing. Like if he stays healthy, it's an auto 1,200 yards. I mean, in his prime, he was auto 1,400 yards when he played 14 or 15 games per year. So if he can, I mean, he wouldn't be the first guy, like aging NFL player, to like, you know, change his conditioning, figure out a way to stay on the field. So it would not be impossible. But yeah, I mean, the fact too that it's not, I don't know if we should be more worried that it's one injury, or I don't know if it'd be more worrisome if it were multiple injuries, or the fact that it's just been the one injury where he cannot get his hamstring healthy. Like I would almost be more comforted if it was just like random body parts and you're like, well, maybe it's just like every time it's a fluke. But the fact that it's like his hamstring every time, I guess the fact that it's one body part though too, they could like hone in on and isolate and come up with like a custom training plan. But
I mean, you got to think the Titans were all over that. The Titans were like,
they probably tried these things, right?
They didn't. Maybe they didn't. I don't know.
If they didn't, there was a huge oversight. They should have asked fantasy managers. You know, what's the issue with Julio? We would have said, hey, the hamstrings, man, get a hamstring expert in here and massage this man's legs.
Get a hamstring expert.
I don't know.
They're out there. They're highly paid. They make way more, ton of money.
Have my hamstring degree.
Starting salary of $250,000 for
please listen. NFL teams would be paying, paying hundreds of thousands.
I gotta get in the hamstring business. It's very lucrative.
Come in.
The hamstring doctor just has the exact same incentives as Julio Jones. Like his incentives are just Julio Jones meeting his incentives. I will say, although I do think like the Titans were maybe not the best landing spot. Run first Titans with already target hog AJ Brown was great for Julio Jones, but they don't gain a ton by cutting him. Like it is good probably that he moves on from the team, but it is a very big indictment of Julio Jones that they move on from him after 1 year without gaining much. They had to designate him post June 1st cut to save $9.5 million. That $9.5 million doesn't really mean a lot because they cannot spend it in free agency. That's how the post June 1st cut works. Spreads out the dead cap over like 2 years, the next 2 years. And you don't get to spend that just like, it's probably just signed their, their draft picks or whatever. So they didn't gain a lot. They really just gave up on him, cut bait right away, not to salvage a lot from cutting him, though I think he could find a much better landing spot. They are telling us something through their actions.
It seemed personal because it's like a need for them still, unless they love like Nick Westbrook.
Yeah. Also, it is a very big need for them. Yeah.
I agree with that. There's clearly something going on like behind the scenes in that way, but this isn't like a young receiver who we have like character question marks about. This is a guy we're pretty confident, is going to land somewhere else and he'll be fine. One other note about just him statistically, his ADOT last year was 12.0. That's a bit lower than we've seen from him usually, but he was at 12.7 in 2020. And so again, not really seeing like a major role change. He was basically Julio Jones when he was out there, but dealing with the injuries and clearly not vibing with his team in 2020.
He was not vibing. I say maybe it could be a Mike Vrabel thing. I don't know. You got a celeb sighting, but this is actually a true story. I shared an elevator in Los Angeles with Mike Vrabel for like 70 floors. Denny and I's hotel was 70 floors. And he was very glum, Mike Vrabel. And probably because he knew he was in the elevator with a fantasy nerd. But seemed like a glum guy. So I'm just projecting that onto, he just must be a glum fella.
He was dressed like a 22-year-old college student, though.
He was. I mean, we didn't need to share that part, but yeah, he was.
Are you sure it wasn't just like some stoner kid at the?
No, yeah, it was unmistakably
random big white team.
Unmistakably, the guy looks like he still plays in the NFL. By the way,
Okay.
Oh yeah, he's in incredible shape.
He was like an extraordinary. I mean, like quite clearly, would just like snap me like a twig, like instantly. Like if I had said the word like "Sir Fantasy Football," he would.
What do you call the good football show? Mike, what do you think Julio Jones' target share is going to be next year?
Are you the reason he got cut?
Yeah, you know what? I realized why he was glum too. The hotel we were in had a very confusing elevator. And the true story, I helped multiple NFL Hall of Famers operate this elevator. It was very, very confusing.
Are you sure you weren't just like a bellhop?
Yeah, no, yeah. Moonlighting as a bellhop. Yeah.
I will say Mike Evans was great at the elevator, by the way.
He was.
He knew
he's
how to
a zoomer, though.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. No, he's actually a millennial, I think.
No, he's a millennial. Yeah. I will say, Mike Vrabel punched me in the neck when I asked him about A.J. Brown's Whopper.
Mike Vrabel, I wish that you had liked Julio Jones more, but
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like season tickets to watch your favorite team, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like paying for parking. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
Russell Wilson officially arrived in Denver, Colorado on Wednesday, and he did his Russell Wilson thing. He thanked every human being known to man and then talked up his extreme excitement to be a Denver Bronco. We know he has some wide receiver talent to play with. Well, that was also the case, though, in Seattle. So it's not like the supporting cast was really a problem in Seattle, Kyle, but we're excited about his supporting cast in Denver. And I just want to know, like, how do we see like this playing out with the Broncos receivers and like ADP? Who do you think is going to have the higher ADP? And Kyle, just like which Broncos wide receiver do you think you'll be prioritizing this offseason?
So it's interesting. Hackett was like the one thing that wasn't very fun about Hackett's offense in Green Bay was that super slow. Pat, you've noticed this before. They're like continually the slowest team in the league, but they did a lot of smart things when they were actually doing the plays they were calling, right? They were using a ton of play action, good amount of RPO, and going deep a ton. You go deep when you have Rodgers, but guess who also can throw the most beautiful deep balls you've ever seen? Russell Wilson. I think really we're going to get more steam on Jerry Jeudy than we will Courtland Sutton. And Courtland Sutton, like, if one of these guys were DK Metcalf, I would say probably Courtland Sutton playing that boundary role, lot like a both high target share and high ADOT type of guy who can really just beat opponents deep consistently. Hackett did that with Rodgers. Russell Wilson, when they let him throw, was doing that really with both of his receivers, but DK Metcalf all the time. I think because of price, but also maybe a little bit of fit, you know, that's part of the argument I'm making. I would say I'd probably be more on a Courtland Sutton. I do think there's a team that is just super volatile in a good way for fantasy, where like you'd want to stack up, you know, a Russell Wilson, even Javonte plus Courtland Sutton, and like throw in Hamler, Albert O.
Yeah, I agree. I think if price gets out of hand on Jeudy, which I kind of expected to, I think once we're into August, Judy's going to be like an early third round pick. I just think there's very few people that are going to kind of like get up and say, we're not doing this. We're not drafting Jerry Jeudy.
We don't have that kind of restraint. We saw it with CeeDee Lamb. We cannot do it.
We don't have that.
There's either going to be people who are very in on Jeudy or people who are fine with drafting Jeudy. I think there's will be a handful of people against it, but not enough to move the needle. So
Crane, not to interrupt, we didn't even have that restraint with Jeudy himself last year when it was right. Teddy Bridgewater.
Yeah, and I think with Sutton, you're going to have, you just don't feel as good drafting Sutton because You have the question mark about, you know, him not playing that well last year, only 1.43 yards per route run coming off the ACL tear. We haven't seen him be awesome since 2019. He was awesome in 2019, 2.08 yards per route run in a not very good situation. To Kyle's point, he is kind of that DK Metcalf style guy. He isn't DK Metcalf, but 6'3", 218, you know, he could play that bigger wide receiver role with Russ. I'm more excited about Judy. I think Judy probably he feels like the ascending player. I don't know that Sutton's going to get back to the heights that we had previously, but the bigger that ADP discount gets, the more I'm going to like Sutton. As it stands right now, I kind of feel like it's time to draft Judy, because if my theory's right that Judy's just going to get more and more expensive over time, I'd like to get my exposure now.
Wouldn't you say that Sutton, if healthy, fully healthy, fits the profile of like the kind of receiver that has been successful with Russell Wilson? I mean, Wilson has struggled at times, you know, thoroughly struggled with intermediate throws. I wonder.
You're not his bag.
Right. And he throws a fantastic deep ball and is a very aggressive downfield thrower. So I feel like that fits Courtland Sutton, better than Judy.
Judy had a 14.6 ADOT as a rookie, and I think he can be, you know, used as a downfield guy. He wasn't great in that role. 1.66 yards per hour in that year wasn't bad though. wasn't ideal. It shrunk to 10.8 his ADOT last year, but he's playing with Teddy Bridgewater. So,
right.
I agree that, you know, Russ is better downfield, but I think, you know, you could kind of think of Judy as the Lockett in the offense, where he's getting some intermediate stuff, he's getting some deep stuff.
Right.
To me, he almost feels like he would have to have a really good NFL career to be better than Tyler Lockett. Like, at least in terms of his upside, he almost feels like he could be like the weaponized like Tyler Lockett to me. Where like he's like on paper, like everything about his profile is like Tyler Lockett, like but better. Again, that's not the most likely outcome because Tyler Lockett's been a very, very good NFL player. But right. I feel like that is within Jerry Jeudy's range of outcomes to like be a better Tyler Lockett, a guy who can do damage both like in the slot, but also down the field. That was kind of his profile coming out of Alabama. I think he's flashed enough at the NFL level where we can still consider that in play.
Yeah, I'm probably overthinking it. Sorry, Pat, but I'm probably overthinking it with Courtland Sutton and fitting the profile of a good Wilson receiver. I mean, Jerry Jeudy is probably really good. So I think we'll just run with that.
To the point of him playing in the slot, he was in the slot, Jerry Jeudy, on 76% of snaps last year, but he played out wide on 67% of snaps as a rookie. So we've already seen the versatility with Jerry Jeudy. Again, we haven't seen him really deliver in terms of the efficiency, but the quarterback situation, as we know, has been not good in Denver. So I think that, you know, Jeudy definitely has that really exciting profile where it's like they can do everything with him. They can move him inside, outside. He can be used in the intermediate. He can be used shallow. He can be used deep. I want Sutton, but I do prefer him at a discount.
I think Sutton, though, has like really explosive upside where he's not really like DK Metcalf. To me, he's more like a bigger DeAndre Hopkins in some ways. Not that he'll be that good, but that was what he was like amazing at, was like sideline domination, kind of like winning hand fights. You know, and like Russell Wilson is willing to pull the trigger on those kinds of throws. So that explosive upside is still there for Courtland Sutton. But yeah, it was concerning. I mean, he was with a quarterback who was infamous for not going down the field, and he was coming off the torn ACL. But it was an unusually bad like post-injury season. The sports medicine has gotten so good in the NFL that we don't really see like these year-long struggles from post-injured players anymore. And Courtland Sutton just was like not good. You know, they were prioritizing targets for Tim Patrick over Courtland Sutton last year. So there's real red flags, but like also like hugely explosive upside with Courtland Sutton. And
do you guys agree that Sutton will get that Judy will get more hyped than Sutton, or do you think 100%. That maybe Sutton is the guy who gets hyped?
Okay. No, I mean they'll both be hyped, but yeah, like I said, we couldn't contain ourselves when it was Teddy Bridgewater for Jerry Jeudy. And I just feel like we love Jerry Jeudy. And that's going to be the case again, that everyone's going to be, there could be maybe a huge contrarian undercurrent for Courtland Sutton, or maybe it becomes like 65, 35, 60, 40 Jerry Jeudy. But I do think the industry is going to prefer Jerry Jeudy.
We have breaking news here. Tyler Conklin has signed with the Jets. So we can neither use Conklin nor CJ Uzomah. I don't take any pleasure in reporting this.
I legitimately didn't know what the joke that is. We have podcast listeners. We have legitimate podcast listeners who aren't seeing this live on YouTube. And I too didn't realize what was happening until I realized that we had put Pat Daugherty to sleep. I don't know if you know, it could have been any of us because
that was a real professional snore. I was impressed with you.
That was like, you know, animated movie type of actor, voice actor stuff for a good
You could
snore.
Do voice acting specifically for snores.
I'm sure that's great. Yeah, maybe I
should. That pays well.
You know what I mean? Or maybe I need to go get like tested for sleep apnea now. I
was like, what the hell is that noise?
I thought a dog was laying on the microphone.
No, yeah, I was snoring. Even though I like Tyler Conklin. I do like Tyler.
Though. We're like talking about Jerry Jeudy and Cortland Sutton plus Russell Wilson. That is so interesting, right? What a great duo. And then I have in our private chat, we're, you know, just making sure we're keeping up with the news. You know, I the link to the tweet. Honestly, don't care if we talk about this. Denny comes in
bang,
with the over go. The head, chair over the head, WWE style. Tyler
Conklin to the Jets. What do we think?
Okay, we can't talk about this for 5 minutes, but Denny, are you going to prioritize CJ Uzama or Tyler Conklin?
Oh, my God. I hate that question so much. Uzama, because he's funny and he's a good guy.
Really? Did we meet him?
That's the analytics. No, he's fun. He's you haven't seen his press conferences. He's the most media friendly NFL player in the league.
I'm not really watching many CJ Uzama press conferences.
Are you online?
Yeah.
Then you've seen CJ Uzama yuck it up with the reporters. Wow. They love the guy.
All right. Well, I think Tyler Conklin is a man bun though, so I like that about him. Yeah, it's Kyle's.
We stand together.
Over that one. Yeah.
Now in New York, I mean, he's probably gonna be in Brooklyn. I'll see.
It's true. He's moving to what part of Brooklyn do you live in again? I forget.
Fort Greene.
What's your address, by the way? On air.
Yeah, just say it out loud,
I'll just put it up here so that people can write it down.
Tyler Conklin, Bushwick is probably like too Zoomer for him. He'll probably move to Williamsburg, get an expensive apartment in Williamsburg with the man bun.
I could totally see that.
Tyler Conklin, by the way, Evan Silva's favorite human. I don't know if any people out there know that. He's had him in our dynasty league since like 2004. So yeah, Evan Silva's favorite human. Yeah.
Conklin was fine when he
was solid. You
know. He was good, actually. So I don't know why I did use the snoring gag on him. I actually do like him.
Well, it hurts that he's the second tight end they've signed this offseason, yeah. Coming from one of the worst quarterback rookie seasons we've ever seen. If he signed as the starting tight end, you know, Gronk doesn't come back, and he signs as the starting tight end for the Bucs, we're like, Gonkle's pretty good. Now he gets to join, you know, the Bucs. He doesn't join the Bucs. He joins the worst quarterback we saw last year, arguably, and is not even their number one tight end. So,
yeah, I want to point out, Sean Washko in our chat says, Uzama is unobtainable in my points per beat reporter chuckle league. And yeah, in those formats, look, you got to know your league. In those formats, you're hammering Uzama.
You got to know your league.
And by the way, we had another interesting comment in the chat from Craig Martin, who there is going to be KJ Hamler hype. We didn't even mention
Oh, yeah. The Broncos. There's definitely going to be KJ Hamler hype. There's also going to be Tim Patrick hype. I was on with Josh and Hayden, and I had Russell Wilson in
Traders,
the draft.
By the way.
We don't talk about
Yeah, sorry for bringing them up. But I put Tim Patrick in the queue because I had Russell Wilson drafted in one of those super flex leagues. And I forgot he was in the queue, accidentally drafted him when I wanted to take Treylon Burks. He was only like 30 spots ahead of AEP. People are drafting Tim Patrick pretty high. So I think you're going to see hype on everyone. Albert O has moved way up.
Albert O is going to be like to the moon in ADP. And I love Albert O as a Mizzou fan, but the next time he stays healthy will be the first time he stays healthy, basically, is all I'll say on Albert O. Has a long and concerning injury history. I believe someone earlier in the show used the word vibe or vibing. Someone said vibing.
Yeah. Probably you.
No, it wasn't me, actually, but I'm going to use it now. We need a Terrace Marshall vibe check after the Carolina Panthers signed Rashad Higgins. Terrace Marshall, I don't know if you guys heard, he was down bad in 2021. We all loved him. And by the end of the year, like Brandon Zylstra was like clearly ahead of him on the depth chart. And just where are we jumping ship on Terrace Marshall? I'll go with Mr. Dynasty Patrick Corain. I think you liked Terrace Marshall too, didn't you? Where are we at on Terrace Marshall?
You know, I don't like to do the game log stuff too much, but let me just read you a little game log here. Week 9. 0 receptions. Week 10, 0 receptions. Week 11, 0 receptions. Week 14, zero receptions. Week 15, zero receptions. Those were all in a row.
And
he ran routes. He was out there. He had 18 routes, 10 routes, 9 routes, 18 routes.
Is that good or bad for his yards per route run? I'm not very versed in the stat.
It was really bad. He had 0.5 yards per route run. I mean, this is,
I feel like Denny can do that.
It's bad. It's a JJ Arcega-Whiteside rookie season, is what he just had.
Whoa.
I mean, it's like one of those, like, you update the priors after this.
They bring back Zylstra, but they also brought in Rashard Higgins, who played like wide receiver 3 or 4 for the Browns. Like, it's clear that they're just trying to find other guys to play wide receiver 3. Not that they want great guys to be their wide receiver 3, but they know that it can't be 0.5 yards per out run Terrace Marshall.
And people have come back from bad rookie seasons, even terrible rookie seasons. You know, we saw Davante Adams climb out of a big, big hole. He wasn't this bad as a rookie, but, you know, over the course of his first couple of years, he was not efficient. Yeah. But I think, you know, with a start like Terrace Marshall had, in the scenario where Terrace Marshall is like a very solid fantasy player, it's like 4 years from now. Like, I think he's got a lot of work to do to get to where he's actually a solid start. I mean, we just saw Zay Jones get a big contract. You know, we just saw Christian Kirk get a big contract, didn't have the best start to his career. You see these guys will surface. Rashad Perriman re-signed again today. So, like, maybe he could be someone down the line who, like, ends up having a moment, but I don't think it's this year.
Damn, that's bleak.
And the team really wanted him to succeed. That's another thing, is that, like, sometimes rookies are put in bad spots where the coaches don't really warm up to them, and they have to fight for every snap they get. That wasn't the case with Terrace Marshall. The Panthers clearly wanted him to be.
Yeah, they put him in position to succeed. Well, it's arguable that they put him in position to succeed since Sam Darnold was the quarterback.
Yeah,
they put him out there
to draw targets. Exactly. Yeah, they put him in position to get out there and get targets, which, if he had gotten a lot of targets, it's kind of what we saw with Jerry Jeudy in his rookie year. Got a lot of targets, didn't do squat with him, but the ability to go out there and get targets means something. And the opposite of it also means something.
So that's not great. Not great. So we're all thinking of you, Terrace, and really don't want this to be a sunk cost in the Dynasty League. So just do something in 2022. We're all thinking of you. I don't even know. We're kind of running out of time here. I've got a few questions. They all seem kind of dumb.
Have we talked about Jarvis Landry? I mean, like.
No, yeah. So should we talk about Jarvis Landry? He can't be the only first of all, he hasn't even signed or anything with the Falcons yet. Like, he wouldn't be the only addition, but Kyle, tell us about Jarvis Landry and his potential fit with the Falcons.
I mean, the potential fit is, I loved it. You had, was it you that wrote up Jarvis Landry visiting the Falcons?
It was
infinite available targets after losing Ridley, losing Russell Gage. I mean, I think they tendered Olamide Zaccheaus, but even like, I think all top five of their wide receivers, obviously not counting Kyle Pitts' wide receiver, all top five of their wide receivers were either suspended, free agents, or restricted free agents going into this offseason. And they lost the best of them via suspension or via getting signed away by the Bucks. So yes, infinite available targets. But I don't think at this point in his career, Jarvis Landry is the player you want to funnel your entire offense through like you would a Michael Thomas a la like 2 years ago now. You want him to be the complement to when the boundary receiver who isn't open is double covered. That meant Jarvis Landry is open 8 yards downfield, right? Because that's where he's going to be playing. You don't want him to be every single target. So although I think it's perfectly fine for a team to sign him, he would be stepping into a wide receiver one role that I just don't think is fit for anymore. It would be a lot of good PPR volume for him, and you really can't say much else exciting about it.
I'm going to be a little bit in on Jarvis Landry because he's not like a 100% slot guy. He can kind of do, like a bit of half and half role. So kind of like Gage. So last year, 59% of his snaps in the slot, 57% the year before that. And they do have the downfield wide receiver. His name's Kyle Pitts. That's the guy who should be stretching the defense. Yes, it's going to be coming from, you know, basically the slot a lot. But if you've got Jarvis Landry out wide running shallow routes and a guy stretching the seam, it's a weird offensive design. But I mean, you know, you could stretch the defense with Kyle Pitts downfield. That's who he is. He's basically DK Metcalf playing tight end. So I don't know. I don't think it's like as bad of a spot as, I mean, essentially, I think he kind of is what you're saying, Kyle, is a secondary target.
I also struggle to believe after seeing what we saw from Arthur Smith last year that he can intelligently scheme to, like, especially like a very specific player like Jarvis Landry in an effective role. I thought it was a very rug pulling for those in the NFT streets. It was a very rug pulling moment to see Arthur Smith go out and I thought put together a pretty disappointing game plan for having unique players, like really skilled, unique players in like Pitts, a just like generational talent at tight end, and Cordarrelle Patterson being so efficient at this hybrid role. And then he ends up just giving him like box carries at the end of the year. So
I think in his defense, I think it's because he ran out of gas. Cordarrelle.
Yeah. And Pitts was a rookie. He had a really, really strong season for a rookie tight end, like an off the charts rookie tight end season. So I don't want to blame too much on Smith. He's in a tough spot.
So Kyle, you're just wrong, Kyle.
Fair enough. Hey, wouldn't be the first time. Won't be the last.
Landry could be what do you call it, Pat? Daugherty, what do you call it?
A scam?
The scam. He could be scam, the ultimate PPR scam.
I'll say we were talking about big wide receivers wearing down. Like Jarvis Landry's like a famously like tough player and played through like so many injuries before the past years where he finally started missing time. And I just wonder if he's like in a running back situation where he's just wearing down.
Look, Jarvis Landry, real football wise, he would be way better as a complimentary piece in a good offense and established pass catchers. From a fantasy perspective, we have to remember that Jarvis Landry, despite seeming like he's 45 years old, he wants the damn ball. He wants it, and they will give it to him if there's nobody else there. I feel like it could be a target bonanza if he signed with Atlanta.
But if he's gonna be a complimentary piece. Please make it on the Chiefs. I would like that fit a lot.
Yeah, right.
The Chiefs.
That would be really nice.
It has been heavily rumored. Kyle, by the way, I wrote and my coach, I've done my Arthur Smith write-up for my coach's article that will be coming out next month. And I do try to examine the fake sharp narrative for Arthur Smith. And I think it's going to gain steam in 2022 because I think this Falcons situation is going to get worse before it gets better. And I'm not sure even if he was like a real sharp, if there was anything he could do about it. So it's going to be an interesting year for Arthur Smith. I'm going to end the show here with some really dumb wraparound questions. I feel like this one might be the dumbest question I've ever asked on the podcast.
That's good. Yeah. I'm glad I'm here for it.
I'll start with Crane since he's in the top right box. Most people are listening to this, so they have no idea what I'm looking at. But who will score more PPR points in 2022, Patrick Crane, Russell Gage or Chris Godwin? Because Chris Godwin is injured coming back from a torn ACL, folks.
Yeah, I'm going to say Chris Godwin. Chris Godwin was just peppered with targets to close the year. He had two game stretch with 17 targets and then 15 targets against the Falcons and Bills. It just comes down to health. You know, is Godwin able to get back and play enough? I do think that Gage is interesting because he can also play inside and out. I think he'll probably be in the slot while Godwin is out. Then when Godwin returns, he'll probably be playing on the outside, and kind of like an Antonio Brown, you know, maybe 70% route rate type of role. And that works pretty well. So I like the signing a lot for the Bucs. I think they needed someone like this. I don't think they could use Tyler Johnson again the way they were last year. That wasn't working. So good real life signing, but I still prefer Godwin.
Danny, who's going to get the more PPR points, the Russ Gage or the Chris Godwin?
It's tough because, you know, Godwin's injury happened so late in the season.
It did.
You got to expect him to miss some time. I guess I'll still go with Godwin just because he's so established with Brady. And it's a long season. You may have heard it's a long season. So, but I'm not saying that, you know, Gage can't be useful for fantasy. And like you said, Pat, the other day, I think it's a huge, big boost for the Bucs pass catching room because, you know, they were lacking. We thought they had some depth. They had zero depth.
None.
Turns out in the wideout room. So Gage is an important add. And you know, if Evans gets dinged up at all, if Godwin takes his time getting back, or if the Bucs are kind of reticent to push him back on the field, Gage could be quite the useful player for a while.
You see, the Bucs, I just realized what they're doing. They're moving on from like the RotoViz. I say this lovingly. Like day two and three draft superstars like Tyler Johnson and Scotty Miller, and just like signing like good NFL veterans at this point, like Rashad Merriman, and they're giving up on like athleticism scores and stuff. It's like, oh, whatever. Let's assign actual good players.
These like 99 percentile dominator players who like, that's actually their high school stacks. They didn't play football in college. They were on like a backpacking trip in Europe. But we're like, you know, they had a good dominator in some school, probably in the Midwest, I would assume.
It would be nice if one of those guys was good.
It would be nice if one of them was ever good. You know. And I'm truly not making fun of Rotovis because I have total solidarity with these players. Oh, yeah. I always think they're going to be good, too.
Score
one for the NFL scouts on Tyler Johnson, because his profile when he was a rookie, we were like, this guy's going to be awesome. And then the scout, we're like, why doesn't the NFL like this guy? Now we know. But the funny thing is, the funny thing about like Tyler Johnson is like once you factor in the draft costs, he was kind of a hit. It's just like, you know,
getting a few starts out of a late round pick is like somewhat useful. But if you actually watched it, you're like, I don't know, was it a hit?
Yeah,
that's a really good point.
No, it really wasn't.
One word answer: is it going to be Harrison Bryant season or David Njoku season, Kyle? And you can have more than one word because you didn't get to talk on the Gage Godwin one, Kyle. Harrison Bryant or David Njoku for the Cleveland Browns after the Austin Hooper release?
Njoku. Don't need the extra words. Njoku's a super freak athlete, super efficient throughout his career. Njoku.
He can't fail this time.
Never.
I mean, Harrison Bryant has quite the resume, right? I mean, he was the he won the award for tight end of the year in college. I forget
Mackey Award.
Mackey Award. I mean, he's not nobody.
It's not Njoku.
No, I agree. I desperately want Njoku to get 110 targets this year. Okay. Like I would, you know, chop off the little part of my left finger to happen. God. Not to be dramatic, but I'm very
Crane, break the tie. I'm counting as a vote for Harrison Bryant.
I'm gonna say neither. I don't really want Jordan Love's tight end or whoever is gonna be quarterback. Man. Who's the quarterback gonna be? Marcus Mariota? It's not gonna be good.
Jimmy Garoppolo.
I think Jimmy Garoppolo would probably be the next option. I really do think they would be like 50-50 to get Jimmy at that point.
They're going to be all over Jimmy, who I feel like is just maybe the worst version of Baker Mayfield.
Yeah.
Worse than Baker Mayfield?
I think he is.
He's worse than Baker Mayfield.
I think maybe his decision-making is slightly better, but Baker, I still think, has a better idea of where the ball is going when he throws it than Jimmy does.
Like down Baker knows when he's thrown at a defender's face. That is
true. Yeah, Baker does know when it's going to be a pick. I feel like Jimmy has no clue when it's going to be a pick. And he's playing with like one finger in the playoffs. I guess maybe we have to factor that in.
Jimmy must know somehow because most of the picks come in critical situations.
Yeah, most critical. So anyways, that is our live free agent reaction show. We actually had a lot to talk about. We had a lot of really good discussions, and we're gonna have more. There's gonna be more signings throughout the week, so please keep it locked to NBCSportsEdge.com for me blurbing every move and signing, every visit, every rumor, just everything. So please keep it locked. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be Karine, do you have your podcast this week, by the way?
No, this was fill-in for the Thursday pod, but we got Danny Kelly coming on next week talking quarterbacks. Diving into that, so check it out.
You know, it's funny that Danny and I have actually talked prospects with Danny Kelly before you have. We did that at the Super Bowl.
I heard.
We beat you to it.
That's what I do.
But that podcast canceled. I got to figure out a new guest.
That's what Danny does. He just talks prospects with nationally respected draft analysts. That's what he does all the time. So yeah, no, that's awesome. I didn't know Danny Kelly's come on the show. He's a friend of the site. Awesome analyst. Denny and I will be back next week. Kyle will be back with the college football show with Matt Stroud. Actually, I'm hosting the college show next week, so I'll be back with Kyle.
I'm just finding out I'm on the college football show. It's only partly true. I just found out it started next week, although I have been preparing for a while.
Interesting. All right. Well, the show's happening, and thank you so much for listening, folks. Keep it locked to the site. We'll be back later.
Want to make mom's day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.